Views and opinions expressed by callers, guests, and hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Black Talk Radio Network and Black Talk Media Project. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium.
Dinar would have had serious consequences for the world financial system, but may also have empowered the people of Africa, something black activists say the US wants to avoid at all costs.
We're slicing cake. We're slicing cake. We're slicing cake.
Say the US wants to avoid at all costs.
We're slicing cake.
Say the US wants to avoid at all costs.
We're slicing.
Gaddafi didn't give up. In the months leading up to the military intervention, he called on African and Muslim nations to join together to create this new currency that would rival the dollar and euro. They would sell oil and other resources around the world only for gold dinars. It's an idea that would shift the economic balance of the world. Countries' wealth would depend on how much gold they have, not how many dollars they trade. And Libya has 144 tons of gold.
Welcome, welcome everyone to Tando Radio Show, brought to you by Black Talk Radio Network. I'm your host, Dave from LA. Just want to thank you all for listening to Tando Radio Show today. It is November the 2nd, 2017. It is a Thursday. We have a live show for you today. At any time, if you'd like to get in on the conversation, then give us a call, 866-510-9025. 866-510-9025. Then hit **. And we will see you in queue. Now, I will be traveling today, have to drive, so we'll be having the show still, but just be mindful that I won't be able to see you inside of the queue, so just say excuse me at any time during the show, and we will definitely want to hear from you, and looking forward to it. One second. As soon as I get on air, it seems like it never fails. I get 35 people that have some real that I have to answer. Man, stop texting me when I'm on air. And they know who they are. That's like family members that I got to answer and everything else. And it never fails. Come on now. All right, so let's get into today's show. But before we do that, everyone, let's start with the administrative duties at hand. Everyone, please continue to support Black Talk Radio Network by going to the website for the network, www.blacktalkradionetwork.com, www.blacktalkradionetwork.com. And once you are there, check out the donation prompt where you can give some of your financial energy. Very, very important that you do that, because that is the only support that this network has, and it needs your overall support to move forward. So please give whatever it is that you can so that this network can stay on air and continue to bring you some of the things that you have deemed as necessary and vital. Also, on how you can support the network is by being a part of its social media outlet. Become a member for only $24 a year, $24 a year, and that will get you access to where you can make all of your posting social media activities that you usually do at other places, you could do here, and in a more holistic and way that gives you more protection than the other places and is not here to adversely affect you. And you could do that by becoming a member in the BTR community. You can find it on the website, on the main page for this website of Black Talk Radio Network. You just look to see the capital B with the black background. Hit that, and that will lead you into becoming a member, where you can post things about yourself, your business, things that you think are relevant, things that you think needs to be highlighted even more, and in a more secure way where you won't be as adversely affected. Now, when you do that, think it's very, very important for us to establish the bonds that are going to be necessary for moving forward when things become apparently completely when we can make everything go right, and we can do that by coming together. It's not going to be easy. Not easy doing that, but it's worth it. And it requires energy to do that. So definitely want you to be a part of that. $24 a year, very easy. You can also go to www.btrcommunity.com and sign up there. Okay. Also, if you would also check out some of the other donation campaigns that are on a BTR community, please give to those as well. I need to do with the Houston relief, flood relief thing. I need to do something with that. And so I will, that Black Rose is put together. I need to check my computer is acting funny right now. I can't get on the website to see if it's still there. And so we'll engage in that. Also, if you would like to acquire real money, you can do that by going to www.prosperitymint.com. Prosperitymint.com is a full-service precious metals dealership where you can exchange your cash for real money. Even though you're not paid as a king or a queen or as a lady and a gentleman, you could definitely save as one. And that would be in the real money, that being one of the forms of real money and one of the most perfect forms of real money, that being the precious metals, okay? So check out what's in inventory there, then email info@prosperitymint.com. That's info@prosperitymint.com, okay? And then make sure you do that and just say, hi, I'm a new customer, would like to acquire the precious metals, and someone will get back to you to explain to you the overall process. Very, very, very important, because it's something that's to your benefit by doing that. It's for you. So definitely, definitely do that. Okay. Also, we have a crowdfunding campaign that I think is absolutely phenomenal. I'm fully, fully behind it. I completely get it now, and going to really start moving forward in this in a more direct way. And I say that because the pay structure, I get how it pays out, and there's some problems with some of the, you know, because it was a brand new system, but the overall crowdfunding campaign is a great, great way to leverage. And the best way to put it this way is you can acquire some of the cryptocurrencies. You can accumulate the Bitcoin, which is about 70, went up to like $7,400 today. I think it's down to 7,100 or just above $7,000 for one Bitcoin. You can use that to acquire and accumulate Bitcoin below the overall sale price of Bitcoin, but be able to redeem it for the full market value. And I'm going to explain that to you all next week more in depth, how it works, why you should be involved in it. Tomorrow I will be traveling. So I'll be traveling across the country, so I won't be able to have a show, and I'm going to have to get out very, very early, so I won't be able to do a broadcast. Scotty, so just so you know, and I'll let Melanated Roots know just in case they wanted to take that slot.
Or you can get or you can get Jerry and Ross to fill in for you for Financial Friday.
Okay.
That's up to you, though.
Yeah.
So, you know, either way is cool with me. I do have a question, though, Dave, related to to this cryptocurrency. Bitcoin, I'm sure you know this, but just for the general audience, I'm seeing people who are making moves in some other type of cryptocurrency. Mm-hmm. And while it doesn't get as much attention as Bitcoin does, they seem, based off of what they're posting, is that they're making some money from those other cryptocurrencies.
Oh, yeah.
Now, here's my question. Earlier today, I was listening to Black Talk Radio, you know, because when nobody's live, there's pre-recorded programming. And actually, it was the show that Jerry and Ross had hosted for you the last time, and they were talking about cryptocurrency. And so I was listening to it, and then a question came to my mind, because one of the callers said that this is a way for them to tighten up their control over currency, mm-hmm. or what have you. But then a question popped into my mind that I didn't think of when the call was going, when the broadcast was going on. Where does this lead the Federal Reserve? And do you possibly see governments going totally digital currency and getting away from paper? And where would that lead the Federal Reserve?
Man, great question. And so let me jump into answer that question. Yes, I definitely and I guess we can make this a part of the show today as well, because it's very, 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 very important. The cryptocurrency, let me just say this. One of the first things that Scotty talked about was some of the other cryptocurrencies that people are actually using and utilizing. Bitcoin was the first one in this platform of the, which you now know as the cryptocurrency coins. It is not new to cryptocurrency. Bitcoin is not new. Bitcoin has been around since the 1700s. It was a bit of a coin, and that's where they got it from in this story that they tell you about how the cryptocurrency coin of Bitcoin was created from a gaming system and a gamer. I don't pay much attention to that because I don't think that there is any real it sounds good, but it to me is not really practical at all. Cryptocurrencies has been around since you've been born. Your first cryptocurrency was your bank account. That was your first cryptocurrency. Your first crypto exchange was whenever you did a credit card. That's all digital transferring of a medium of exchange. So this is nothing new. And so Bitcoin was the is the original cryptocurrency coin, meaning you can mine it, that came into the space. And because it was the original one, it doesn't have the same utilization or is not able to expand itself. This is why they have what's called forks and everything else. It splits. The first fork on Bitcoin was Litecoin. And I remember when Litecoin was 16 cents for one Litecoin. Remember when it was 16 cents for one Litecoin? And Litecoin, in my opinion, is one of those other cryptocurrencies that Scotty was talking about. People, if you ever used cryptocurrencies and if you ever made a payment or sent Litecoin to someone else, just when you say, okay, I'm going to send it to you right now, as soon as you say now, it goes right to them. It pays them immediately. It's so fast. That's because less people are using it, but it actually had designed itself to be able to have that functionality, to be a fat. And in the future, I think that Litecoin is going to really explode. One of the things that I'm going to be doing is I'm going to be leveraging myself in some of the cryptocurrencies as a measure, like I would do cash. And some of the ones I'm going to be looking at is not Bitcoin. It's absolutely not Bitcoin. The Bitcoins that I will have, I will some of them I will keep, some of them I will exchange for more leverage. Litecoin is one of the ones that I think is going to be a phenomenal opportunity. It's at $54 right now. So, very much so. Now, to answer Scotty's question about the Federal Reserve and where is this going? Is everything going to go completely digital? I think that there is going to be much more of a digital footprint in the economic paradigm going forward. And where does that leave the Federal Reserve? It leaves the Federal Reserve in an even stronger position than what they have right now. Because in my opinion, the Federal Reserve, the private bankers of the Federal Reserve and controlling the banking industries are the ones that have facilitate bringing you the cryptocurrency. that's, in my opinion, who's doing it. Even though they talk to banks, oh, you're getting, you know, you're going to be able to, you're sticking it to the man, and you're cutting them out, you're cutting out the middleman. No, you're not cutting out the middleman at all, because there's a fee for everything that you do in the cryptocurrency realm. And that fee does not go to you or the other person. Yes, it has a measure of peer-to-peer, but it has a measure of peer-to-peer. You wouldn't be able to transfer or make a payment or to have someone send you or receive cryptocurrency based off of the system that you created. If you created it, then it would cut out the middleman. But you actually have to go through what? The blockchain and the overall, and then you have to pay what's called gas. Gas is what you use to travel from one place to another in a vehicle. So there's a gas fee that you have to check. Who do you think is really in controlling that gas fee? And why do you think Bitcoin is going up so high? Reason, in my opinion, the logical reason is not to believe the propaganda, but to find some measure of truth. And the measure of truth is this. If the bankers have already established a financial system, and if you're not creating a different or walking away from that system completely, and they've had such control over it, what makes you think that you are going to bring something to market globally that is going to have the overall expansion and has the overall usage that the cryptocurrency has without going through the same system as before? They're just not telling you that it is. They came up with a great story so everybody will buy in that you're cutting out the bankers. Really? And why would you say that? Well, somebody told me that. Okay. Someone just told you that. But did you really think about how it works? If the overall bankers, if let's say the Federal Reserve or the one that controls the fourth city state in the world, which is known as BIS, the Bank of International Settlements, which is the overall central bank of central bankers, where they develop banking policy for the world. Like, there's four city states. Most people that know about the city states, they only recite three, but it's actually four. The three are that are most commonly cited is Washington, D.C., the Vatican, the city, Vatican City, the city of, City of London, known in the financial world, the City of London, and that is the overall cusp of the financial world, and then BIS, Bank of International Settlement, in Basel, Switzerland. Look at their headquarters. Pull them up on Google. Look at BIS, Bank of International Settlements, headquarters. Image it on Google. You'll see what their headquarters looks like. It looks like a boot. Why do you think it looks like a boot? Because that's what they're doing. They're stomping on the world financially. It's in Switzerland. You got to know the history about Switzerland. Very key position also in establishing what you know as the monarchy in England. There was a place that the so-called Queen of England met with the Germans because she was affiliated with the Nazi program. Where did that happen? Switzerland. Near Basel. Coincidence? No, not at all. All right, so I digress from that. So the cryptocurrency, Scotty asked, what about the Federal Reserve? Well, the Federal Reserve will always see, whenever you see they're about to have a new so-called celebrity Fed chairman, you know, Alan Greenspan, Bernanke, Yellen, Paul Volcker, and the new person that's going to be coming, these are all celebrity figureheads. They're no different than the overall individual that you see in all forms of government. That's what happens whenever cameras are rolling. Cameras are used. Whenever people are in front of cameras, they're actors. That's what they are. They're actors. And what are actors? They're professional liars. That's all they are, professional liars. So the credibility that you should have in those professional liars should be very little to none. They do give you bits of truth if they even know it, but they do follow the script to the T. Else they're no longer on air. So, Federal Reserve and the new, are they going to completely digital? I think that that would be very, that's part of their overall plan, but I don't think everyone in the world will give in to that. But the lion's share and the part that really matters will. Just like you don't buy the overall propaganda of all of the lies and deceptions that they have pushed out. But you are not a part of the masses. You are actually a part of very few people that choose not to. So there will be a small remnant of people that will not engage in it. But in overall, the Federal Reserve is actually a part of the cryptocurrency realm. Where do you think those fees go to? It goes to the same controlling entities that control the banks. Because here's the key to it. It's a cryptocurrency. They've given you hard currency known as promissory notes or bills. Bills are receipts of debt, commonly known to as dollars, yens, yuans, reals, francs, pounds, euros, so forth and so on. That piece of paper you have in your pocket. So if those individuals have established that patent to create that currency, and they have gained much control over the global financial world, what makes you think that some gamer, some so-called gamer that was playing on their game, developed something that would take them down off of the computer system? Where computers, who really brought computers to you? Who brought computers to market? Who brought the internet to market? Do you think that the internet is a controlling mechanism that the system uses? If you don't think it is, I would say, you'll love today's show. So how I see it directly is that the bankers do want digital currency because it allows them to always to actually minimize the overall anonymous transactions between individuals that are actually engaging in a peer-to-peer system. A peer-to-peer system means that there is no middleman. None whatsoever. There is no additional fee. So what do they want to do? They want to minimize that. And how do you minimize that? Like everything else, you make a Facebook that people will think is really popular, and they say, hey, we could get in touch with everybody and have a good time on it. And hey, cryptocurrency, it keeps going up. The value is going up. The currency is going up. Woohoo, I'm rich. Yes. You're rich, and you will be able to own things that they can repossess at any time. Uh-oh. At any time. So the Federal Reserve is going to have even more influence over the world by way of the crypto digital currency space, because you won't be able to engage. The likelihood of you being able to or wanting to engage in peer-to-peer is going to be less. One of the things that you always want to do is to get people to surrender their free will to you. Because if they use their free will against you, you can't win.
Wow, Dave.
Gotta get them to surrender it. Go ahead, Scotty.
Man, I was in the other room monitoring the program because I got to take care of some stuff. But I had to come back in here and say I did not even think about that. The street market, what you going to do? You know what I'm saying? If they was to change over to cryptocurrency, some of the things that people who are not in an advantaged position do to survive on the street, if there's no currency, how can they make them transactions unless they doing trade? But I ain't even think about that, man. That's huge.
It is huge. It really is, Scott, because it offers them what? To make sure that their overall subjugation and their free will is primary. So, yeah, they're definitely in it. And how I say to use it is this way. Right now, the rest of the world is not on it, so they're going to continue to entice the rest of the world to get into it. And what you should do, use it as leverage to get real money so that you can engage in peer-to-peer that cuts out the middleman and puts you in a position where you can start to control resources that allows you to minimize or cut out the middleman as much as you possibly can. And then from there, it's much easier, as a buddy of mine said to me, and I was talking to Roz on the phone today when my buddy said this. He said, David, it's much easier to raise a healthy child than to fix a broke man. He wasn't talking about financially broke. Much easier to raise a healthy child than to heal an ill man. He's talking about mankind, not men in general. It's so true. It's so, so true. So this is going to give them even more leverage, because here's the key to it all. Now, just imagine, let's say you're doing something that they don't like. They're going to give you all of the whatever you want, whatever your desire of your lust is, and whatever addiction that you have, and they've all gotten us on so many different addictions, and whatever one resonates more in our body, they'll give it to you, and we'll take that as payment to give up our energy to, or give up our free will to the agenda of someone else. And then all of a sudden you say, nah, I'm not going to do it. You know what they'll do? Now they could cut your bank account off completely. See, before, even cash gave you some form of being able to engage in the black market. Cryptocurrency, you can't engage in the black market. They can actually trace where you are, what you're doing, where it's coming from, who's the beneficiary of this, and then cut you completely off. One of the things that's very important with the cryptocurrency is that it's subject to hacking. Or you think that they won't hack into your account? They won't have to hack into your account. They have the patent on it. They have the patent on it. But see, they have hackers to act as a smokescreen, so you won't know it's them that's doing it. It's the system that's doing it. They'll point and say it was this dude. And then you ready to fight that guy. So cryptocurrency actually gives the system more. It's actually one of the revolutionary moves that they use periodically. It's nothing new. They had it back in before. But now it's time for it to bring it back at this time, because all of the conditions and the criteria for its overall effectiveness is here, completely here. They can cut you off right away. They can cut you off right away because it has to go through what? The blockchain. The cell blockchain. What is a block? A block is a building device, or it's used as a builder to facilitate a design. What's the design? They say it's one thing to give you some form of financial freedom. That's exactly what it's used for, to give you financial freedom. Freedom is what's given to you by a man. It's not sovereign. Not sovereign. Big difference. Huge, huge difference. So, yeah, I see the cryptos in a very, very different way, and I think it's something that we should be using to our advantage. But knowing where it came from. If you didn't create it, you can't trust it. If the great creator didn't create it, I can't trust it. Think about the cars of today. We no longer have cars anymore. We got techmobiles. That's a cryptocurrency. And when that Technomobile mobile that you have, it could be cut off at any time. They could drive it backwards. They could slam on the brakes. They can make your brakes not work. You know, it's one thing, you got a problem when your car won't start. You got a disaster when it won't stop. So all of this is design. We need to know it so that we can do what? Do something about what we know. Not overwhelming. It's an opportunity for a solution. There are always, always solutions to it all. So this is what, you know, we really want to try to bring you. So very, very important. That's just my take on the cryptos. I know there's a lot of people in the cryptocurrency world that will tell you it's this, it's that, it's this and that. And I hear them. I don't listen. Because they're not speaking from what they know. They're speaking from what they think. I'll tell you, this is just what I happen to believe. This is what I think. I don't know. And the thing that I don't know is I really don't know how it works because I didn't create it. Yeah, I may know how it operates, but I don't know what its true intentions are because I don't know how it works. But from history, I can kind of put my finger on it's probably this right here. And because this is so... It's filled with such ubiquitous fraud. It's probably something that I need to protect myself and my family and those of you that resonate that way as much as we possibly can. So I'm good. I'll go with that route and see where she goes. So check this out. Okay, so now want to do real quick. Want to play something for you. I'm not going to get into what's in the news because I'm going to be traveling and I'm going to miss it. A lot of great, great articles that are there. Today's show is, and if you'd like to get in on the conversation at any time, don't hesitate. Give us a call, 866-510-9025, 866-510-9025. Because I'm going to be traveling, I actually got to get in it and get going, and then I will be broadcasting from the vehicle. Is the today's show for the second is the necessary smokescreen to separate the masses. The necessary smokescreen to separate the masses. And the cryptocurrencies, the, you know, many, many things are used to do that, propaganda, media. And what I want to do is I want to play something for you that is about 10 minutes long. Very, very, very important. And I want you to hear, this was from TEDx. This was... a journalist that gave a very well put together example of how smoke screens, how the media is used to the media uses manipulation to compromise the truth. And we know that's very true, but I want you to hear it from her standpoint and then want to come in and tell you why I said that because it plays off into so many things.
Hey, Dave.
We should be aware of everything. Yeah, go ahead, Scotty.
I'll play it for you because the audio comes through better when I play it for you. So I got it pulled up
okay.
Now. I'm just waiting on the page to load.
Okay, cool. You see it's the box of lies, Scotty?
Yes. I'm just waiting on their page to load.
Okay.
All right, I'm going to the YouTube
video. Yeah, AstroTurfing.
Yes.
Yeah, we've got to go to the YouTube
turf,
one.
Mm-hmm. AstroTurf and manipulation of media messages.
Yep. So I want to play that. And then what I want to do is it's about a 10-minute video. When we come back, I want to talk to you why I wanted to, just something I wanted to bring to your attention just so that you can see the importance of it and to do what's necessary for you so that you'll have a choice in what it is that you feel is necessary. And then, of course, at any time you'd like to get in on the conversation, to give us a call, 866-510-9025, 866-510-9025, then hit **. So whenever you're ready, Scotty, just let me know.
I'm ready.
We'll go straight to it. So
I'm ready.
To me, okay, so what we're going to do, we're going to jump into it right now. It's about 10 minutes long, and then we'll open up and then we'll just continue the show from there. So you're listening to Tando Radio Show, brought to you by Black Talk Radio Network. Getting ready to listen to this. Really, really just pay attention, and then think out, and then put it in context to what you know truth to be and what deceptive tactics have been used that you are well aware of, and put it all together. And I think that you'll see something, how important it is for us to resonate with the truth. The truth doesn't need us. We need the truth. So we're going to go ahead and play this. Go ahead, Scotty.
So consider this fictitious example that's inspired by real life. Say you're watching the news and you see a story about a new study on the cholesterol-lowering drug called Cholextra. The study says Cholextra is so effective that doctors should consider prescribing it to adults and even children who don't yet have high cholesterol. Is it too good to be true? You're smart, you decide to do some of your own research. You do a Google search, you consult social media, Facebook and Twitter, you look at Wikipedia, WebMD, a nonprofit website, and you read the original study in a peer-reviewed published medical journal. It all confirms how effective Cholextra is. You do run across a few negative comments and a potential link to cancer, but you dismiss that because medical experts call the cancer link a myth and say that those who think there is a link there are quacks and cranks and nuts. Finally, you learn that your own doctor recently attended a medical seminar. The lecture that he attended confirmed how effective Cholextra is, so he sends you off with some free samples and a prescription. You've really done your homework. But what if all isn't as it seems? What if the reality you found was false? A carefully constructed narrative by unseen special interests designed to manipulate your opinion. A Truman Show-esque alternate reality all around you. Complacency in the news media combined with incredibly powerful propaganda and publicity forces mean we sometimes get little of the truth. Special interests have unlimited time and money to figure out new ways to spin us while cloaking their role. Surreptitious astroturf methods are now more important to these interests than traditional lobbying of Congress. There's an entire industry built around it in Washington. What is astroturf? It's a perversion of grassroots, as in fake grassroots. Astroturf is when political, corporate, or other special interests disguise themselves and publish blogs, start Facebook and Twitter accounts, publish ads, letters to the editor, or simply post comments online to try to fool you into thinking an independent or grassroots movement is speaking. The whole point of AstroTurf is to try to give the impression there's widespread support for or against an agenda when there's not. AstroTurf seeks to manipulate you into changing your opinion by making you feel as if you're an outlier when you're not. One example is the Washington Redskins name. Without taking a position on the controversy, if you simply were looking at news media coverage over the course of the past year or looking at social media, you'd probably have to conclude that most Americans find that name offensive and think it ought to be changed. But what if I told you 71% of Americans say the name should not be changed? That's more than two-thirds. AstroTurfers seek to controversialize those who disagree with them. They attack news organizations that publish stories they don't like, whistleblowers who tell the truth, politicians who dare to ask the tough questions, and journalists who have the audacity to report on all of it. Sometimes AstroTurfers simply shove intentionally so much confusing and conflicting information into the mix that you're left to throw up your hands and disregard all of it, including the truth. Drown out a link between a medicine and a harmful side effect, say vaccines and autism, by throwing a bunch of conflicting paid-for studies, surveys, and experts into the mix, confusing the truth beyond recognition. And then there's Wikipedia, AstroTurf's dream come true. Billed as the free encyclopedia that anyone can edit, the reality can't be more different. Anonymous Wikipedia editors control and co-opt pages on behalf of special interests. They forbid and reverse edits that go against their agenda. They skew and delete information in blatant violation of Wikipedia's own established policies with impunity, always superior to the poor schlubs who actually believe anyone can edit Wikipedia, only to discover they're barred from correcting even the simplest factual inaccuracies. Try adding a footnoted fact or correcting a fact error on one of these monitored Wikipedia pages and poof, sometimes within a matter of seconds, you'll find your edit is reversed. In 2012, famed author Philip Roth tried to correct a major fact error about the inspiration behind one of his book characters cited on a Wikipedia page. But no matter how hard he tried, Wikipedia's editors wouldn't allow it. They kept reverting the edits back to the false information. When Roth finally reached a person at Wikipedia, which was no easy task, and tried to find out what was going wrong, they told him he simply was not considered a credible source on himself. A few weeks later, there was a huge scandal when Wikipedia officials got caught offering a PR service that skewed and edited information on behalf of paid, publicity-seeking clients in utter opposition to Wikipedia's supposed policies. All of this may be why, when a medical study looked at medical conditions described on Wikipedia pages and compared it to actual peer-reviewed published research, Wikipedia contradicted medical research 90% of the time. You may never fully trust what you read on Wikipedia again, nor should you. Let's now go back to that fictitious Kalextra example and all the research you did. It turns out the Facebook and Twitter accounts you found that were so positive were actually written by paid professionals hired by the drug company to promote the drug. The Wikipedia page had been monitored by an agenda editor also paid by the drug company. The drug company also arranged to optimize Google search engine results, so it was no accident that you stumbled across that positive nonprofit that had all those positive comments. The nonprofit was, of course, secretly founded and funded by the drug company. The drug company also financed that positive study and used its power of editorial control to omit any mention of cancer as a possible side effect. Once more, each and every doctor who publicly touted Kalextra or called the cancer link a myth, or ridiculed critics as paranoid cranks and quacks, or served on the government advisory board that approved the drug, each of those doctors is actually a paid consultant for the drug company. As for your own doctor, the medical lecture he attended that had all those positive evaluations was, in fact, like many continuing medical education classes, sponsored by the drug company. And when the news reported on that positive study, it didn't mention any of that. I have tons of personal examples from real life. A couple of years ago, CBS News asked me to look into a story about a study coming out from the nonprofit National Sleep Foundation. Supposedly, this press release coming out said, "The study concluded we're a nation with an epidemic of sleeplessness and we don't even know it, and we should all go ask our doctors about it." A couple of things struck me about that. First, I recognized the phrase "ask your doctor" as a catchphrase promoted by the pharmaceutical industry. They know that if they can get your foot through the door of the doctor's office to mention a malady, you're very likely to be prescribed the latest drug that's marketed. Second, I wondered how serious an epidemic of sleeplessness could really be if we don't even know that we have it. Right? It didn't take long for me to do a little research and discover that the National Sleep Foundation nonprofit and the study, which was actually a survey, not a study, were sponsored in part by a new drug that was about to be launched onto the market called Lunesta, a sleeping pill. I reported the study as CBS News asked, but of course I disclosed the sponsorship behind the nonprofit and the survey so that viewers could weigh the information accordingly. All the other news media reported the same survey directly off the press release as written without digging past the superficial. It later became an example written up in the Columbia Journalism Review, which quite accurately reported that only we at CBS News had bothered to do a little bit of research and disclose the conflict of interest behind this widely reported survey. So now you may be thinking, what can I do? I thought I'd done my research. What chance do I have separating fact from fiction, especially if seasoned journalists with years of experience can be so easily fooled? Well, I have a few strategies that I can tell you about to help you recognize signs of propaganda and astroturf. Once you start to know what to look for, you'll begin to recognize it everywhere. First, hallmarks of astroturf include use of inflammatory language such as crank, quack, nutty, lies, paranoid, pseudo, and conspiracy. Astroturfers often claim to debunk myths that aren't myths at all. Use of the charged language tests well. People hear something's a myth, maybe they find it on Snopes, and they instantly declare themselves too smart to fall for it. But what if the whole notion of the myth is itself a myth and you and Snopes fell for that. Beware when interests attack an issue by controversializing or attacking the people, personalities, and organizations surrounding it rather than addressing the facts. That could be AstroTurf. And most of all, AstroTurfers tend to reserve all of their public skepticism for those exposing wrongdoing rather than the wrongdoers. In other words, instead of questioning authority, they question those who question authority. You might start to see things a little more clearly. It's kind of like taking off your glasses and wiping them and putting them back on and realizing for the first time how foggy they'd been all along. I can't resolve these issues, but I hope that I've given you some information that will at least motivate you to take off your glasses and wipe them and become a wiser consumer of information in an increasingly artificial, paid-for reality. Thank you.
Okay, so I wanted to you to hear that for a couple of reasons. And recently I was given a class on, it was part of the precious metals class, and one part of it, part of the class, I've always gone back to Wikipedia, knowing that Wikipedia was that type of site and everything else, but for a very specific reason. And of all of the years that I've been doing this precious metals class and showing things to some of our clients, the place that I wanted to go in Wikipedia for had been completely altered. The very, very important and critical part of it all had been taken out of the body. And it kind of caught me off guard, but I knew exactly what I was dealing with. And luckily, the client that I was speaking with is a sharp individual, and this individual knew that, and they know me, they knew that, and they could hear right away in my voice that something was wrong. And they said, "What's the matter?" And I said, "Well, they changed this." And the individual wasn't surprised. And so I'm looking for the change that was made. And I'm laughing on everything because the change that was made was very, very significant. It was extremely significant because what it did is it proved collusion. And it proved and showed the intent of a specific fraternity. And lo and behold, I didn't see it, but the individual saw it and said, "Oh, it's right there." Now, one thing I didn't do was I never, you know, screenshot it or anything. I don't need to do that because I don't always need to prove. I never try to prove myself anymore. Before I would, because I was actually taught that in a formal profession. But I don't need to do that anymore. And I wasn't really worried about it, but what happened was so profound was the very individual that needed to see it found it. And that's very, very critical because how much of the truth are we really resonating with when we're getting all of the information from the liar? When she, you know, the lady had talked about a couple of things, that how she says some of the things that you can do to recognize astroturfing, spoofing. And Roz had was on earlier this week and had a posting in, about all of the bots on the internet. How do you identify that? How are you able to separate the truth from the lies and the deceptive nature? And why is that so important? Here's what I use, what I've used, and I think is pretty effective. One, if the system has always been a liar, when are we going to believe that they are liars? And once we know that they are liars, then their credibility is completely shot. But it is completely shot to our advantage. It's completely shot to our advantage because of this. Whatever they say and whatever they do, you know that it has a nefarious agenda. There is no credibility that is benevolent that we should entrust in them. Just because they speak, we know that it is the ledger of lies, destruction, and demise, subjugation that is going to be burst forward.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, go ahead, Scotty.
I have a thank you for sharing that video. I'm a member of the Wikipedia community, and I did that so I could edit stuff like she was talking about that author when I came across stuff that I knew was untrue, and I had sources. And every time I would change it, they exactly what he said, they would change it back. Okay, and now anytime you, I'm not saying don't go to Wikipedia. That can be a starting point. They do are supposed to have. Let me say they supposed to have. They don't always have the links to the external sources that they're supposed to have. But you don't want to just go by what's off that page. You then want to check the sources that if they're linked, and then go there as well. But let me read something from Wikipedia. Because, see, I kept going on Wikipedia because of the 13th Amendment. And they made some changes to that entry, but not the changes that I had edited and put in, including with my sources. But let me read this to the listening audience. Mm-hmm. Now, most of the Black Talk Radio audience is aware of New Abolitionist Radio, and we've been on for 5 years. And y'all know that we are thorough in our research and what have you. Now, for those who are familiar with the 13th Amendment and how we say it does not abolish slavery, it just transform it from the plantation to the prison. Let me read this excerpt. I just pulled up 13th Amendment. I'm going to read this excerpt. Though the amendment formally abolished slavery throughout the United States, factors such as black codes, white supremacist violence, and selective enforcement of statutes continue to subject some black Americans to involuntary labor, particularly in the South. In contrast to other Reconstruction amendments, the 13th Amendment was rarely cited in later case law, but has been used to strike down peonage and some race-based discriminations as badges and incidents of slavery. Now that right there is true. But here's the part where it gets deceptive. The 13th Amendment applies to the actions of private citizens, while the 14th and 15th Amendments apply only to state actors. The amendment also enables Congress to pass laws against sex trafficking and other modern forms of slavery. That is a lie. That is a lie. The 13th Amendment, while it moved it from private hands to state hands, they were still like convict leasing. They mentioned the black codes. Right before the black codes, they set up private prisons and started the program of convict leasing. So those private citizens could then go to the state and say, I need to lease some slaves, and bring them right back on that plantation, or bring them to the mine, or take them to the railroads and what have you. Okay. And then also the second part of the 13th Amendment says that Congress shall have the power to enforce and regulate and blah, blah, blah. You know, the first section. All right. Now, so what Congress did was I think it was it Ronald Reagan or was it Nixon? What they did was then pass laws to enable private prisons, where again, private citizens, whether they are the CEOs of the company or whether they are stockholders who have bought shares in the company. So to me, that is private citizens profiting from slavery and sex trafficking and all that's already illegal. And it has nothing to do with the 13th Amendment. So I hope people understand the deception that's in this Wikipedia article on the 13th Amendment.
See, that's why it's so important for us to know the historical facts, or at least understand what the overall objective is and what the motive is. And one of the things that I think is very, very important, one of the practices that I think is important, is to find the motive. What is the motive behind this being placed in mainstream media? Why is mainstream media right now fixated on the Hollywood child pedophile ring? For a reason. Not because they want the pedophilia to end, not because they want anything, but there's a reason behind it all. Why is it that there's this on TV right now and that on TV? Why is this propaganda being birthed forth? Because it serves an agenda. And if we know that, then we know that the overall media and the overall avenues of media is not credible, then we can move ourselves to a measure of the truth that we can start to acquire ourselves.
Hey, Dave, there was one other example I forgot to bring up. And so on New Abolitionist Radio, Max found a video of a conference on, I think it was on the 13th Amendment. It was sponsored by the Bar Association. The Bar Association is the association that lawyers pay dues to and whatnot. All right.
And the British? Yeah.
Yeah, the Bar Association. So they sponsored this conference. They invited some professors from different, and some of them were from HBCUs, black people. And the whole purpose of that conference was, I felt like, to push back against the new abolitionist movement, which is growing by leaps and bounds, and to say that slavery has been abolished, and to portray us like we're the kooks and we're the crazies for saying that the 13th Amendment. So they bring these professors on and they try to do everything they can to debunk what we've been saying for 5 years. And not just us, but was said by Assata Shakur, was said by Angela Davis, was said by Huey Newton, was said by Lee Wood in his book, Prison Slavery. And so everything she talked about, I have seen this astroturfing of the abolitionist movement.
And you know, Scotty, that's the thing that's so important. The bar, so most people don't know that every judge takes an allegiance to uphold the queen. That's what the bar is. That's what that whole thing is, and it's all filled with ubiquitous fraud. And if we start calling the system what it is, and whenever they want to do something, we know that it's not in our best interest. If they want to give you anything, it's a poison. From health care to financial aid to new medical technology, to whatever it is that they're offering you, it's always at the hands of the devil's lair, the devil's creed, that evil, malevolent agenda to maintain control over everyone. And if we start looking at the system as that, then we will be able to see it for what it truly is. It's completely vulnerable to our dismantling it by not participating in it. And it's not that hard. Yes, it's a difficult... The one thing that she said, the lady said, was that she can't change it. Well, that comes from a defeated standpoint. Yes, you can change it. You change it within you. That does no beneficial good. When you do that, you are actually giving back to the overall momentum, back to the system, because it allows for an excuse and an out to continue to go in the path that you've been going in before. Have you ever seen a leech? A leech needs to eat. And what is the job of a leech? The job of a leech is to find a host. We have to stop and allowing ourselves to be good hosts for the leeches. And one of the most powerful tools that this system likes to use, as we get ready to go into a commercial break, is it needs to control information to be the magic trick, not to trick you, but to make you believe. To make you believe that what their story and their agenda is necessary for your survival. Listen, get ready to go to a commercial break. If you'd like to get in on the conversation, give us a call, 866-510-9025. 866-510-9025. I'm not on the board, so I won't be able to see you. If you have a question or comment, just say, excuse me, and then I will hear you and we'll go to you. You're listening to Tando Radio Show, brought to you by Black Talk Radio Network. We'll be right back after this quick commercial break.
Radio since 2008, providing new black media for the masses.
Okay, welcome back, everyone, to Tando Radio Show, brought to you by Black Talk Radio Network. If you'd like to get in on the conversation, we'd love to hear from you, because a dialogue is more important than a monologue. Give us a call, 866-510-9025, 866-510-9025, then hit **. See, we'll hear you in queue, because I can't see the board, so just come on and say excuse me. And for if you have a question and comment, we'd love to hear from you. So I'm not quite sure if we have any callers that are in queue. If you are in queue and you have a question or comment, you can make yourself known right now, and we will go right to you.
The board is clear right now. I'll let you know if, okay. If anybody come open.
Okay, great. Thanks, Scotty. So let's get into why is this so important? How does this divide the people? Because it's a very, very effective tool. And I want to give an example of how effective this tool is. You all heard of Chase Bank, right? Everyone has heard of Chase Bank. Well, Chase Bank is actually named after one of the most influential Secretary of the Treasuries that the corporation of the United States has ever had. And this was Salmon P. Chase. And he was known during his time. He was in the Lincoln administration and everything else. Didn't get along with Lincoln and everything else. But there was some very, very important, significant things that was relevant about to where you still know this individual's name to this day. And it was so instrumental and so influenced and such an influence that Chase is not named after the owner or the controller of the financial institution by way of a trust, a foundation, or by way of a family name. It is a memorial to a person that facilitated the overall banking control of the Corporation of the United States that expanded itself globally. Sam and P. Chase did such a great job, they named the whole banking institution after him, one of the most powerful banking institutions in the world. But they won't tell you that. Here's what's up. Chase started off as an attorney, strike one, facilitating the overall oath and obligation to the bar. Strike two. Okay. I'm going to be nice. But here's the significance with it all. It was all a facade and a setup. Chase was an individual that was known as being an abolitionist when he really wasn't. Because what the system will always do is that they will put out propaganda in front of you so that you will allow it to seduce you to doing what the system really needs you to participate in for it to be functioning, for it to function. And they are going to give that individual, that institution, the necessary influence to get you to believe. Here's what happened. At the time, he was known as an abolitionist, and in courts and everything else. But that was never really his intention. Here's why. Because from there, he became one of the most influential Secretary of the Treasuries that ever was. Because what he did was he allowed the banks to be able to subjugate and enslave every single person in this country by way of a greenback, by a promissory note, by a promise that your energy that you expend will be redeemed in an equal medium of exchange. And what they did is they came up with a receipt to do that. And they made it a note, a promissory note, that they knew that they had already defaulted on, because they created that instrument to serve them at the expense of you. Chase did such a great job at instituting this great revolutionary medium of exchange or medium of subjugation that they named banks after him far beyond his living days. The exact same thing is going to be happening in the crypto space. The very same thing. See, one of the things is that not original, they just rehash what worked before in the past because we weren't around at that time. And one of the reasons, because they've bitten and they've intoxicated and they've inebriated our ability to resonate with the truth. And because we can't identify the truth, we have to read it. And they write the books that we read and source and reference. And they hide the truth, mere morsels of the truth, right in front of us, because they know that your overall spiritual awareness to things is still so keen beyond their toxification, so they have to give you some morsels of that. And it is an effective, efficient program. So what did Chase do? Chase was a part of the overall financial banking cabal that wanted to revolutionize subjugation and enslavement of people, not of one color, not of one culture, not of one particular place of the planet, but every dang gone body. And how do you do it? You take the plantation and put it on the palm of your hand. And that was just one of the ways that they were going to facilitate and revolutionize the subjugation of the people. Now all you had to do was to get the people to buy it hook, line, and sinker. How many of us know what cream is? Cream, cash rules everything around me. How many of us know that people will kill you for a piece of paper? Looks like they've done a great, fantastic job in perpetuating their agenda, their objective. And the method that they use was proven because it's layered. What do I mean by it's layered? They have a multifaceted approach to success. They have a multifaceted approach to success. They don't just rely on their fastball. They don't just rely on their curveball. They rely on the poison in the hot dog that you're eating at the game. They rely on the seat that you're sitting in. They rely on the ticket that you purchased. They rely on everything else, the whole rules of the game. They rely on the field, the umpire. Everyone is a part of the overall cabal, criminal cabal to subjugate, because it takes the effort of many to deceive for generations. I think that was Roz.
Yes.
Not quite sure. Yeah, go ahead, brother.
Oh, please. I'm sorry if I interjected. I know you said you weren't on the boards today.
You're good.
What you're describing is what Dr. Marimba Ani termed rhetorical ethics. And this is something that they've mastered, because it's all about deception. And all rhetorical ethics is giving another person the impression that you sincerely care about their well-being, and you're doing something or you will do something to assist them in facilitating resolution of an issue, when in reality you're working to do the exact opposite in ways that the person who you're dealing with has no comprehension of. And what that is, to me, it's a direct link to that article I read about the Hegelian dialectic. And all that is when the system, the government, creates a problem, it creates they psychoanalyze the masses to see how they react to that problem. And then once it has reached a fever pitch as far as the reaction of the masses, they'll come out with a solution. And this system, the original system, credit system, and the one that we still follow right now that's in the process of collapsing, is a system based on faith. It's a credit system. So if the government's creating the problem and giving you the solution, remember that a lot of our ancestors started to believe, once they lost physically to the violence that these people were capable of, some of them started to believe that these people were more powerful and endowed by the Creator with some ability that they weren't, because they weren't doing something maybe spiritually, or weren't appeasing the deities in a way in which that these people were. So in other words, the Creator was backing these people's control and domination. So there is the beginning of our
by faith.
And what it is as they create the problem and bring the solution, it creates more faith in the system. Because what you said, it they'll create the problem, give you the solution, and then asking them to take away your rights rather than them having to forcefully put it on you. So it's all psychosocial conditioning towards the means and ends of the person who's pulling, people who are pulling the puppet strings in the first place. And that, to me, is the major linchpin in what we haven't learned in regards to how these people function and how the system functions overall. And as a result, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy where we keep doing the same things over and over and over. And you'll have a few of us, excuse me, like the people who listen to Tando and people who are fighting the system in a way where they're bringing comprehensive information. These people are the ones that are looked at as the nut jobs, or the ones who are outside of the purview of reality, because everyone else is saying, well, the system has fixed the problem. But in fixing the problem, it's not really fixing it. It's putting a Band-Aid on it and creating spin-off problems so that when it's opportune for them, those new problems will arise. The masses will react to them. They'll psychoanalyze the masses again and say, let's create a new solution to this one problem while there's five other spin-off problems that are still festering that they're waiting to bring to fruition to the forefront again. So, and I remember Scotty earlier today was talking, I forget, he wrote a thread that he wrote himself, and he was talking about people kept saying that, basically the Hegelian dialectic, that people kept saying that, you know, they were distracting our attention with one problem, and then when that distraction is over, they'll create another distraction. And he could say something to the effect that isn't it basically a more direct approach is to say that there's problems in the world, which there are, but the problems that we're dealing with are being orchestrated. And that's what I think we don't think. We don't think about the fact that there are human beings, and this is what I love about Neely Fuller. We don't think there's not even human beings. These are hominids. We don't think there's hominids that are working 24 hours a day, 7 days a week for our destruction. And when Neely Fuller said that these people will go to the bottom of the ocean to get a grain of sand to analyze it on how they can further dominate us, we don't think that there's beings out there that function with that kind of psychosis, psychopathy, acute narcissism, and racism, white supremacy, but that's what we're dealing with. It's no different than the way that we've been taught to, when it comes to our enemy, to sift through all of those people to find the good one. And their psycho machinations are the complete opposite. All of us are the same to them. No matter what we do, no matter how educated we are, no matter how nice our clothes are, the car we drive, the house we live in, no matter what we do, they look at us collectively the same. So every time they see one of us, we all get treated the same, and that's why we're still dealing with the same issues. And while they're doing that to us, they're on top, while we're sitting there trying to find the good one. Which one is going to help me? Well, what are they doing while they're helping you? Because they're also doing things you don't know about that are seeking your destruction. So this is the psychology. I don't trust any of them until this system has been collapsed. Once the system is collapsed, then I can worry about who's good and who's not. Until then, my antenna is going to be up. And not just with them, with us too, because a lot of us have been so tainted and infested with the destructive culture that these beings have put in place, that a lot of times the most dangerous person to you sometimes will be the one that looks like you and is right next to you, and you have no concept of that if you're not studying the system properly.
So I was just about to say that, Ross.
It doesn't mean abusing them, being mean to them, being nasty. It's taking a scientific, emotionally detached approach to studying them, because that's what they do to us. And that's why when they do things that are so heinous and so wicked and so evil, they can do it with calm detachment. And watch 100,000 people die, or watch 500 people get shot on the West Coast, and it's no big deal to them because they function this way. This is the way that they. It's in their DNA, and we are not cultivated that way. And we're trying to feel our way through something. To me, that a lot of us, not all of us, because some of us do have a much better understanding, but most of us don't, and it's creating a self-fulfilling prophecy of population control, where we're either killing ourselves or putting ourselves in a position for them to kill us and call it justifiable homicide. I'll mute my line. I'm sorry if I went on too long.
Hey, Dave, it's something that Ross brought up and also you brought up. And I'm going to keep bringing it back to slavery. And I understand economics of enslavement and all that, but you know I'm talking about physical enslavement.
Right.
So I'm going to bring it back to something you brought up about this Chase guy, and I'm going to have to do more research on him because I knew who he was. I didn't know that much about him. I did not know he was pretending to be an abolitionist. Now, you said that he was in Lincoln's administration. Well, Lincoln was a lawyer too, strike one, like you said. Lincoln also was pretending to be an abolitionist. Yep. Okay, and so I believe that those who were thinking forward, and they were seeing that there was masses of people who were just simply not going to tolerate slavery no more, and that they were willing to die to end it. They were willing to go to physical war to end it. So what did they do? They come, they, I believe, and I had to find some more research so I can then say this is a fact, but I believe those elements who wanted to mitigate the abolitionist movement went and found Lincoln and got him to pretend to be an abolitionist, got him into office, and then he mitigated. Now, earlier today, I made a post because this is a myth. We're talking about myths. We all been told that he was the great emancipator and that he was a abolitionist. I said today, Abraham Lincoln was a slavery restrictionist, not an abolitionist. Yes. And in his own words, if you allow me to just read this briefly. Now, you tell me if this sounds like an abolitionist or a person who's trying to mitigate the damage and keep slavery in place. He's writing a judge by the name of A.A. Stevens. He says, and who is a Southerner, a slaver. He says, my dear sir, your obliging answer to my short note is just received, and for which please accept my thanks. I fully appreciate the present peril the country is in the weight of responsibility on me. Do the people of the South really entertain fears that a Republican administration would directly or indirectly interfere with their slaves or with them about their slaves? If they do, I wish to assure you, as once a friend and still, I hope, not an enemy, that there is no cause for such fears. The South would be in no more danger in this respect than it was in the days of Washington. I suppose, however, this does not meet the case. You think slavery is right and ought to be extended, while we think it's wrong and ought to be restricted. That, I suppose, is the rub. It certainly is the only substantial difference between us. Yours very truly, Abraham Lincoln. Now, Abraham Lincoln wasn't talking about Frederick Douglass. He wasn't talking about Harriet Tubman. He talking about Chase and his buddies, okay, who were profiting from slavery, and they know that was the main way that they were raising capital. All right, was through physical slavery. So when he says it ought to be restricted, is that the same thing as saying we think it ought to be ended? No.
And exactly, Scott. And not only that, Scott, it should be restricted to what? The prison system. We can restrict it. It's what you and Roz are talking about. It's so profound because we have to realize that there is a conspiracy agenda. And in order for us to really protect ourselves from this, we have to have an asymmetrical approach that is equal or superior to those tactics that are being used against us globally.
That's why, Dave, when I went to Washington, D.C. for that rally, we made a point to go to the Lincoln Memorial, and we made a little short video. And I made sure I gave him the finger. I gave the spirit of Lincoln the finger because I know. And what was so sad, speaking on something that Ross brought up, as we were leaving, it was a black woman and her child going up the steps to the memorial. And I take it that they were visiting from out of town. And we overheard her say to her little girl, oh, you know we got to go see Lincoln. Oh, that's my hero. I just shook my head. But you do got another call.
Yep. So true. Well, before we go to the other call, I want to say this. Please read Lincoln's writing and he will tell you who he is. Read his personal writings. But it's more important because Lincoln is the celebrity figurehead. The system allowed him to be in position, and they used him for the purpose of what they wanted to ensure would bring about their overall securing of the seizing of every person's energy, because enslavement is about not about chains, it's about seizing a person's energy. So let's go to the other caller.
Jim?
Yes.
He says, hold on, Thomas from New York.
What's up, Thomas?
How you brothers doing?
Good, 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 brother. Real good.
Yes, sir, man. That was interesting, man. You brought up Chase. Very good. I brought up the bar. I used to work at a law firm in the mill room, man. I used to have to mill that stuff to London all the time, the renewals. They would all have to send it at a certain time. And then you had New York had to have theirs at a certain time, and whatever other state they were affiliated with, if they had a P number in, that's, you know, the bar association, which is really just a gimmick, because you're supposed to represent yourself in court. But, you know, somehow in the Queen's Court, you need to have a representative, and they're always looking out for the best interest of the Queen. So I just want to say on the other side of Chase is J.P. Morgan. The name of the bank today is J.P. Morgan Chase. And J.P. Morgan, who the Rockefellers thought was their banker, set them up, set up General Electric, set up a whole bunch of companies, AT&T for them, a whole bunch of their businesses. And then when he died, John D. Rockefeller realized that he got the whole time, because he only died, J.P. Morgan died with only $80 million. And Rockefeller couldn't believe it, but he found out that all of the assets that J.P. Morgan had acquired through those companies all went to the Rothschilds, who sent him here in the first place to infiltrate the Rockefeller organization.
Yep.
So it was very interesting that Rockefeller names his date today J.P. Morgan Chase. Two people that really screwed him over, got him on the Antitrust Act and everything. But that's how they work things. So I just want to say, great show. Also, we was talking the last time. You know, I don't find it funny that, you know, and you can call me a conspiracy theorist or whatever, that when you look at the Kennedy assassination, and I believe that the Bush family was definitely in on it, this week, when it looked like the president was about to get impeached, the hammer was about to come down on him, what did he bring out? Some Kennedy tapes, and you saw that impeachment went the other way real quick. They didn't want that to come out, so he watered down the tapes for them, and I think just the threat of it backed them off of him for a little while. I mute my mom.
Always good to hear from you, Thomas. Always. And you know, Thomas, when he talks about the mailroom, that mailroom is. Let me tell you something about the mailroom. The mailroom is probably the most important place, because it is the actual place where the corporation separating its contracts. It's the separations of contracts happens in the mailroom, which actually legitimizes them in the system. Man.
Hey Dave, so, we got...
this is why they always say the mail must get through.
We got another caller, but Brother Braggs, we're going to...
Let me just say about that mailroom, brother. You're right. It's the brain. It's not the brain. It's the heart of the operation. If you work in the mailroom, you know everything that's going on in a corporation if you're looking for it. You get internal mail, which is never sealed. And we occasionally open that, you know, and we knew everyone's salary. We know everything that's popping. The contracts, like you said, every contract they got, we knew everything about it. I'll mute my line again. I'm sorry.
Hey, no problem.
No, Thomas.
We got another caller, but we're going to go to break.
Yeah, let's go.
We're going to go to break first. Brother Braggs, I'm going to mute you because we hear the dogs in the background, but I will unmute you as soon as we come back from break. Thomas, I just added a new section to blacktalkradionetwork.com. It says videos. I just posted a video earlier today on the Bushes, the Dulles brothers, who are with the CIA as well. and them being behind the Kennedy assassination. It's about an hour long, and no, that is not a conspiracy. It was a conspiracy. It was a conspiracy to kill him, but it's not a theory.
Right.
It's not a theory. And so check that out if you got a chance. I just posted it today. It's in the new video section of Black Talk Radio Network. Dave, we're going to go to break, and then when we come back, we can pick up Brother Brad.
Definitely.
All right.
Let's do that. All right, everyone, get ready to go to a break. Give us a call, 866-510-9025. 866-510-9025. Want to hear from Brother Bragg. When we come back, what is it that we could do? What's some of the asymmetrical approaches that we could do? It's very, very easy, but it's going to take an asymmetrical agenda and approach by us to see the overall relevance of it and the necessity of it for us to complete that and to bring about the full fruition and power of it all. You're listening to Dando Radio Show, brought to you by Black Talk Radio Network. We'll be right back after this quick commercial break.
Podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
Hey, Dave, you must be on
mute.
Welcome
back, everyone.
Oh, okay, there you go.
I was trying to unmute myself, Scott. Welcome back, everyone, to Tando Radio Show, brought to you by Black Talk Radio Network. If you'd like to get in on the conversation, we'd love to hear from you because a dialogue is much more important than a monologue. You know, by listening to Tando Radio Show and Black Talk Radio Network, it's the dialogues that's so, so important because everyone brings something that I think is very, very critical to what it is that we need to start to conceptualize. I definitely want to talk about some solutions and some things that we can start to do collectively among ourselves, an asymmetrical approach that is necessary. So let's get back to the show. We got Brother Braggs that's in queue. Oh, man, let me tell you, I'm going to tell y'all, I put out a little hook for Brother Braggs because I know he was going to chime in and it was going to bring the heat when he came. So I'm sorry, Brother Braggs. I didn't mean to bait you by that. And I know what it is, but it's because your overall perspective is so, so vital to us. So go ahead, Brother Bragg.
Hey, peace, man. I just wanted to speak on Lincoln a little bit, man. Lincoln had a speech called Slavery Forever in his first inauguration. That speech was March 4th, 1861. Also, let's talk about Mr. Lincoln. Lincoln supported the Federal Fugitive Slave Clause of the Constitution, which compels citizens of non-slave states to capture runaway slaves. He also supported a constitutional amendment known as the Crown Amendment, nationalization of the money supply with the National Currency Act and Legal Tender Acts due to abolition of the rights of nullification and secession. They did that at gunpoint. Lincoln was a lifelong advocate of colonization or deportation of black people from America. He was a manager of the Illinois Colonialization Society, which procured tax funding to deport small numbers of free U.S. blacks residing in the state. The Book of Colonialization After Emancipation by Philip Magnus and Sebastian Page. You can find all about that. Lincoln also strongly supported the Fugitive Slave Clause in the 1850 Fugitive Slave Act. The slave catchers by historian Stanley Campbell, the Fugitive Slave Law remained in force and was executed by federal marshals all during Lincoln's regime. The Corwin Amendment, named for Rep. Thomas Corwin of Ohio, the exclusive northern U.S., voted in favor of the Corwin Amendment by a vote in favor of Corwin 133-65 in the House of Representatives on February 28, 1861, and by a vote of 24-12 in the U.S. Senate on March 2nd for President Lincoln. And that's all. I just wanted to support Lincoln. Lincoln was a straight advocate to send all the people from here that he could out of the country. But he knew you were from this country, so you got to really dig it. And then Lincoln, another thing about Lincoln was what they call a a Melungeon. I guess that's how you spell it, how you pronounce it. These Melungeons live in the Appalachians, and they're a Creole type people, a mixture of indigenous people and some foreign pilgrims that came over. But they're like a closed-like group. So Lincoln was also a man of color, basically. And that's all I had to say, man. Peace, peace.
Oh, Brother Braggs, Dave, if you don't mind, let me just give some confirmation of what he just said, because I just looked it up. Brother Braggs, why you ain't called in the New Abolitionist Radio and shared this information? I'm mad at you, bro.
I got a bunch of stuff. Sometimes, man, you got to talk, and I'll share a bunch of stuff. But all I do is archive stuff, man. I can show you a bunch of different stuff.
Yeah, but you could also put that out there on Move to Abolish 21st Century Slavery Group, which you a member of, and share that, you know, with the abolitionists, those who have declared themselves abolitionists. But let me read this. Let me give you the title. The Ghost Amendment That Haunts Lincoln's Legacy was published February 18, 2013 by Richard Albert. I'm going to jump down. It says, but the 13th Amendment we know now differs substantially from the first one proposed. The initial amendment would have made slavery constitutional and permanent, and Lincoln supported it. This early version of the 13th Amendment, known as the Corwin Amendment, was proposed in December 1860 by William Seward, a senator from New York, who would later join Lincoln's cabinet as his first Secretary of State. This is what the Corwin Amendment said. Again, I tell you, they didn't push this myth so hard, you know, through movies, through their books, their so-called, like Dave says, they don't educate you, they school you. But this is what the Corwin Amendment says. No amendment shall be made to the Constitution which will authorize or give to Congress power to abolish or interfere with any state with the domestic institutions thereof, including that of persons held to labor or service by the laws of said state. So what they did was refine that, and we had the 13th Amendment with its slavery exception clause. Thank you, Brother Braggs.
And that, you know what, too? That's what those boys did. Remember, we got two constitutions. You got an organic constitution, the Constitution of the United States, and the Constitution for the United States. Those are two different documents. One of these documents was predicated upon the Iroquois North American Federation. That's the indigenous Indians of America. And those are the people who helped set the government up. Those are the people they refer to as Moors also, those Iroquois, those Indians, a bunch of different tribes of Indians. Now, you also, as far as Indians, you have the amalgamated tribes. That's the tribes that the United States government picked. And most of those tribes are going to be your Mongoloids, your Asiatic-type-looking guys, because they're natives. They're not indigenous. They're not Auto-Chitan, so it's a big difference. I really didn't want to get off subject, but just in that vein, just check this out, man. I was just looking at this. This is how deep these boys was ingrained in the slave deal. All of these boys, let me go back to it. I was just looking at, I'm going to show you something about who was over here and things that they don't never tell you. King Charles and his people, they were over here already. Here you go. The Secret Treaty of Verona. And that's another thing. You got to read the Secret Treaty of Verona. That's really important. And the Libra Codes are really important. Here you go. James Stuart, the Duke of York. Now, James Stuart, Duke of York, this is one of King James, this is some King James people. It's James Stuart, the Duke of York, one of the most successful slavers in colonial American history. James Stuart conquered the settlements between the Delaware and connecting rivers from Dutch in 1644, and the name of the port, New Amsterdam, was promptly changed to honor the new master, James' brother, King Charles II of England. Gave the territory to the Duke in exchange for four beaver pelts annually. The Duke of York, who later became King James II of England and James V11 of Scotland, created Britain's greatest slave empire, known as the Royal African Company, which transported between 90,000 and 100,000 African slaves to the Caribbean and American colonies between 1672 and 1689. King Charles II established the Royal Adventurers Company in 1664. Slaves purchased by Royal Adventurers Company of England were branded by Duke of York after the president of the company. Now I'm getting into Sesquicentque Trust. I don't want to go there today. All right, man, that's all I got on that. But these boys were heavily entwined in slavery. Everything, remember this, everything, when they came to this country, they didn't know how to do a daggone thing. So when they came here, they came to a great civilization. They started, first thing they snatched up was the girls and the women, because they didn't have women and girls. So that's the first thing they started. They went on a raping. Well, once they survived, because they had to survive first, remember, they didn't know how to fish, they didn't know how to build, they didn't know how to plant, they didn't know how to do nothing. And that's what you got to keep in mind when you're dealing with the lies that we have been told. We have been totally, totally, totally lied to. And that's all I got to say. I hate the rant. Peace.
No, Brother Bragg, that was no rant. So true. So true. Now, you know, why did we bring this up? It's very important because one of the things that I think that we have to recognize is that there's going to be many smoke screens. There's going to be a lot of astroturf that is going to be used to divide everyone so that the overall system can protect its weakest points. And its weakest points of the system is when there is no inclusion by the masses, when the masses don't facilitate and allow for the system to have an agenda. When they do not participate in it, then it falls. It falters. This is nothing more than a magic trick that people have put blind faith and confidence in to believe. One of the things that Roz talked about is in the debt system is based off of faith. But see, when you know, the difference between believing. The big difference. You know, and believing is two different positions of leverage. Whenever someone has to have faith and have to believe that something, that means that they can be subject to it not being true. When you know the truth, it stands on its own. Very, very important. So I say that for this reason. It's critical, absolutely critical, that we understand that everything that is put before us is very, very important to know what the system is thinking so that we can go in the opposite direction. Whatever they say, whenever they want you to do something, know that it is for a malevolent reason, that it is going to not only destroy you, your family, the community, is going to destroy the human species, because everything is about the very, very valuable asset of energy. Because with energy, you're able to build a paradise that can't be subjugated. You're able to build sovereignty, and it starts, one second, and it can start at the smallest levels and can grow to whatever size those that will it to grow. The system is as powerful because there are those that have willed it to be what it is, and so shall it be. So listen, we'll have a part two of this. So what I want to do is I want to go to, go ahead, I hear Roz, and I want to hear from everyone. So let's go there.
Thank you, Brother Dave. And peace to Brother Bragg, Scotty, as usual. Y'all coming with it. You too, Dave, Thomas. I love all of y'all. I want to say, I have to talk to you after the show. It's very important. I don't know if you got my previous
text. Okay, yeah, definitely.
That's one.
Yeah.
But one thing I wanted to say, too. Oh, thank you. Okay. The Lincoln being a Melungeon is why he ended up on that brown penny. Between his quote-unquote emancipation and the fact that he himself was non-white, they basically niggerized him by putting him on the only copper-colored coin in U.S. currency. So I definitely wanted to confirm that, and it's brilliant that Brother Bragg brought that out. Also, I wanted to say, when I used to hear Scotty, when I first started listening to Black Talk, and he would always talk about slavery being the foundation of white supremacy, I used to not totally agree with that. But as I started studying more and more, it just really made me understand that, because if you study the early history of our contact with the so-called first documented white folks, the Greeks and the Romans, there wasn't a strict color-based system back then. And what made me start to really agree with Scotty on a deep level was that when you study the history of indigenous people, because all peoples had a slavery system, the vast majority of them functioned as indentured servitude systems, but they were called slavery just because the person wasn't an autonomous being, as far as them being beholden to that contract they had or their parents might have had with whoever they were indentured to. And what I came to understand was that white people went around the world, and not only did they understand that they were the exclusive minority on the planet, but they also studied the indigenous slavery systems around the world. And what they did, if you look at their society, like Brother Bragg said, they couldn't do anything. They didn't know how to do anything. That's why they had all those diseases. That's why they were dying off. So when they started traveling, and this was happening from ancient times, so when they started traveling around the world, they started to institute slavery in order to control the energy for those indigenous people who were geniuses. When they walked up on anybody, the Maya, the Aztecs, you name it, these people were living the most sophisticated, in some cases even more modern than the lives we live today. And they could not tap into that because they were actually stupid. So they came up with the most ingenious idea ever, become delegators through slavery. We can't do it, so we're going to brutalize these people, get them to believe in us by killing as many of them wholesale in the most violent, heinous ways as possible. And once we have them in a state where they're subjugated to us and they believe in us, then we're going to delegate everything that we can't do and make them do it. And from that, they spun that off and said, well, you know what? On top of that, we're the world minority. We're facing genetic annihilation because, like Brother Bragg said, wherever they went, they never took their women. They would rape the indigenous people wherever they found them. And when those offspring came out and they realized that these were non-white, melanated offspring, then they said, well, you know what? Through this system, we could dominate the whole planet. And we're going to just be the white brains of the operation, and they're going to be and the non-white people are going to be the automatons of the system that we create. And that is the whole reason behind the technology. Yes.
Hold on. Hold on, Roz. Let me just, because we got to get ready to get out of here. And this is so relevant and so important. And I'm going to have to get out of here now. So, but here's what is so critically important. We know the tactics that have been used. Now what's critical for us to do is to resonate in a way that no longer can those tactics have an effect on those that we have yet not named. And how do you do that? It really depends on us coming together collectively and establishing our own self-determination from the smallest steps to what we can build from that first step that we take. And it is not going to be easy because it's a system that's already been in place, but still it's worth it and it can be done. And until we all realize that there's an action plan that we need to have, one of the things that's most important in this action plan is that if you control resources, then there is no reason for you to have a boss. There is no reason for you to have someone controlling you, because you're able to what? Sustain yourself. Sustain yourself to use your energy for what is purposely beneficial and prosperous to you and your overall direction and your purpose. Very, very critical. Didn't want to cut you guys off, but got to get ready to get out of here. Listen, everyone, it's never goodbye. As always, we'll see you later. What's coming on next, right after Tando Radio Show, is BIB, Black in Business, with the Golden Voice, CC, and Brother Robert X. Much love, much respect. Talk to you a little bit later. Brother Bragg, if you would do us the honors as chiming us out. And let me tell you why chiming us out is so important. Because we resonate with high frequency. Because that's what the prevailing force that is able to pierce the future does.
Much love, much respect. Brother Bragg, get us out of here. We'll talk to you soon. Rise, call me.
Peace.
Dinar would have had serious consequences for the world financial system, but may also have empowered the people of Africa, something black activists say the US wants to avoid at all costs.
We're slicing cake.